Time now to talk to Hannah Carell, a neuropsychologist and an expert on conditions of the brain. This week we're going to be looking at neurodiversity and adult diagnosis of ADHD and autism. It's a theme today as my guest After Three has produced a documentary on adults with ADHD and how that might be an advantage. But first, Hannah's with me to talk about adults being identified as neurodivergent. Hannah, kia ora.
Hi, how are you, Wallace?
Very well, thank you, Hannah. Now, how common is it for someone who is neurodivergent to get a diagnosis in adulthood?
Yeah, well, you know, it's actually becoming more common. The way I answer that question is to take you way back to some time ago, you know, 30, 50 years ago, and the diagnostic criteria that we used to use for ADHD and things like autism. Now, that diagnostic criteria was based on research using little boys, okay? So the types of diagnoses that we were making back then were for little boys who had a particular type of ADHD known as the hyperactive, predominantly hyperactive impulsive type. So those are the kids who were jumping off the walls, flying on the chandelier, you know, really obviously in your face. It's very clear that they're really struggling at school. So they get picked up. They got picked up pretty easily and quickly because the teachers noticed a problem. Now, we now know there are different types of ADHD. There's another type called predominantly inattentive. And there's actually a third type, which is a combination of inattentive and hyperactive. Now, these inattentive children are the ones who sit quietly in the back of the class, stare out the window, and aren't really paying attention. They might be daydreaming, might be really disorganized and scattered. And maybe they can put in a huge amount of effort to catch up with their peers, or maybe they just kind of slip through the cracks because the teacher didn't really notice them because they weren't the ones making the loud noises and bouncing up and down on their chair. Now, we fast forward to, you know, 30 years later, that we know now that that diagnostic criteria that was used helped us to identify a lot of little boys when they were younger. But other types of children who had inattention and who were perhaps young girls, which predominantly is affected by inattentive symptoms of ADHD, haven't been as well detected. So we're seeing adults come forward now in their 30s and their 40s and their 50s saying, you know what, I've always struggled with paying attention, being really distracted, being unable to organize myself and get my life in order, just constantly losing things, and I'm just a, you know, a hot mess, essentially. Coming forward in adulthood and saying, hey, I think I might need some help for this because I'm really, really burnt out. So we are seeing more and more people recognising the symptoms of ADHD in adult life.
It's so very interesting. Yes, I came across a person, a gallerist, actually the other week who was diagnosed later in life as having attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. How can you tell the difference between having ADHD rather than feeling just burnt out or other reasons for feeling a certain way, Hannah?
Oh, that's such a good question, Wallace. The reason that's a great question is because you're tapping into a very true phenomenon, which is when we're stressed and when we're anxious and burnt out, it wreaks havoc on our attention and our ability to concentrate. So we all know, you know, a day that you're feeling really crummy. So a great example is if perhaps you've got a bit of a hangover, you know, the next day after you stayed up really, really late, maybe you've had one too many drinks the night before. The next day, you feel pretty crummy. You feel kind of sluggish, like your brain is moving through molasses, and you feel quite lethargic and not really like you're ready to sit down and weed through your quarterly BAS statement or do all your income tax or do all those really, really effortful chores that you just, oh God, I don't want to do that right now. And it's hard to concentrate on those things. So when we're down, when we're low, we know that things like depression and anxiety have an impact on our attention. And that can be a reason why a lot of people have struggled to get a diagnosis because the doctors or psychiatrists can't differentiate between depression and anxiety. When we know it's more than depression and anxiety is usually when the person has had a really solid whack at trying to get on top of their mood, okay? So that means going and seeing a psychologist, going to your GP, talking through these issues and addressing what might the factors in your life that might be causing those low moods with your sadness or with your stress or your anxiety. Now, if you have addressed those and your attention issues go away, fantastic. We know it was a mood issue. If they don't go away, that tells us that there might be something else going on in the wiring of your brain, and your brain is wired differently, and you might need a little bit more help when it comes to concentrating.
It's quite complicated, isn't it?
Sure can be.
What role do social skills play in perhaps looking for signs you might be diagnosed with being neurodivergent?
Yeah. So I suppose now you're kind of tapping into the other end of the spectrum is autism and people who might be socially quirky. So I suppose it's a good place to start with that is we used to think that autism was a little bit like a line, a linear diagnostic category, where, you know, one end of the spectrum you had neurotypical people and the other end of the spectrum you had your very clearly high-level autism. Now, we know that it's not so much a line anymore of black and white, you have it, you don't have it. We know it's a bit more like a pie chart. If you imagine a pie where there's lots of different slices out of that pie, you can have elevated areas in some places. So maybe, for example, you're really, really sensitive to noise. You're very sensitive to the sounds of people chewing. It drives your mental. It sounds like nails on a chalkboard. But you might be very low in other areas. Like you might be quite good at eye contact. So we know that people can be quite quirky in certain ways. So you might have elevated areas of some of your social skills, but then be very neurotypical in other areas. So where it becomes a problem for you is if it starts interfering with life and relationships and maintaining relationships with family and friends and partners. So I also, you know, as a neuropsychologist, tend to see adults coming forward going, I've just had this ongoing issue of feeling different, feeling like I'm constantly acting and masking and playing a role when I go into social situations. And when I get home, I'm so utterly, utterly exhausted and I just can't do it anymore and I want some answers.
Brief one here in terms of the role of stimulants and medication. Can you ask why does adult ADHD only seem to be managed with stimulants? I don't know if you want to briefly comment on that, Hannah.
I mean, that's an interesting question because I don't think that it always is managed by stimulants. I think there are lots of other ways to manage ADHD, which includes learning strategies to help yourself with managing your own symptoms and understanding where your weaknesses are and how to manage that, and also working on reducing the other basic stress factors like your depression, your anxiety that might add up to make you even more scattered and even more disorganized. So there's lots of different therapies that involve cognitive remediation that help with managing ADHD symptoms, as well as, you know, working with your GP to work out if there's any other factors going on with your bloods or within, you know, your biology. So that it's not just stimulant medication, and usually stimulant medication is just an avenue, one way to help you get back to a basic quality of life.
Very good. That's Hannah Correll, neuropsychologist there.